Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's October 28th. 53 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 59 in the Heber Valley. We've got a 40% chance of some rain today, mainly after about 3 o'clock. Otherwise, partly cloudy skies, looking for a high today of about 57. There is a chance of some snow late tonight, and they're forecasting maybe an inch possible, less than an inch, another couple 2 to 4 inches possible on Tuesday, with perhaps another 1 to 2 inches possible on Tuesday night. Wednesday, we've got a high of just 38 with some snow showers Wednesday morning, and then warming up and a little bit, mostly sunny skies for Halloween, a high of 46, and it looks like another round of snow coming in late Halloween night. 59 degrees currently in the Heber Valley, again looking for rain today. 62 is the overnight low. And then the expected high, 26 is the overnight low, again, with a chance of some rain turning to snow with just not a lot of accumulation, maybe a half inch tomorrow, with snow showers lingering on into Wednesday morning. But sunny Wednesday afternoon, a high of 43, 51, and mostly sunny on Thursday. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be talking with a member. I'll be talking with the superintendent of schools, Caleb Fine, recapping last Thursday's meeting about the future of Treasure Mountain Junior High School and plans for the athletic fields. The executive director of Mountain Town Music, Brian Richards, joined by Ryan Walsh with details on an upcoming event featuring The Last Waltz. That's happening this Saturday. And Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff in with her monthly update and lodging report. Well, the Park City School District is working to begin construction on new athletic facilities this spring. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the plans include softball, baseball, and soccer fields.
The Board of Education has been working to balance sports facility needs before making any final decisions on the athletics master plan. It's now on track to approve initial project phases before the end of the school year. The board looked at the proposed athletics master plan at its meeting Thursday. It's divided into four phases. Phase one includes building a softball and baseball field by Treasure Mountain Junior High. Phase two involves demolishing Treasure Mountain, which will be decommissioned after the school year. In its place, soccer fields and tennis courts would be built. Phase three includes renovating the existing Park City High School gym and building a field house and parking. Phase four would revamp the Dozier football field with a new track and turf. Project architect Scott Lader said while the district has other needs, he recommended the board move forward with at least part of the athletics plan to ease some of the current facilities challenges. He said the phases don't have to be approved and completed in order.
There's an overlap that happens naturally when snow falls, we can't get on fields. Those activities push into gym spaces or other places in the city, and it's creating that pressure point.
Lader said the highest need is for softball and baseball fields, which parents and students have previously advocated for. Lader said if the board approves phase one, construction on those fields could begin this spring and they would be usable by fall 2025. Business administrator Randy Upton said the board would not need to raise taxes to pay for phases one, two, and four. The combined projects would cost around $36 million, and the district's buying power also increases when combining projects. However, phase three, which includes the gym renovation, fieldhouse addition, and expanded parking, would cost upwards of $90 million. The district is examining options to fund these additions, including a potential tax increase. The board decided to review the plan again at its next meeting, November 19th, when it hopes to approve phases one, two, and four before the end of the year. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, as we reported, the Park City Board of Education looked at the proposed athletics master plan at its board meeting last week. And joining me in the studio to recap that meeting, I have Interim Superintendent of Schools, Caleb Fine. Good morning, Caleb.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be here.
Yeah, so maybe start by explaining the need for new athletic facilities as the district sees a shrinking enrollment.
Yeah, we have had issues with our athletic facilities for quite some time, specifically outside, getting students on to the turf and in the winter. With all the snow, we can't get students on our fields in the spring. And that's a challenge. We also have a lot of different demands between lacrosse, which came online recently, soccer, football, track and field. So there just hasn't been enough space. And this is an opportunity to ensure that all the student athletes have the opportunity to be on fields in our home turf. And we're really excited about the potential.
So while we may be seeing fewer students enrolled, are we seeing more sport kids?
Believe it or not, even with decreasing enrollment, we've seen about 50 student increase in sport, student athletes the last 3 years. So we are seeing significant participation in student athletics, over 700 last year.
All right. So of the four phases, we heard that only one of them, that's phase three, which includes the field house, would require new funding. So are we saying here that the other phases one, two, and four can be paid for with our reserves?
So it would not be reserve funding, and Randy Upton can obviously clarify some things, but at a basic level, there's a way to do lease revenue bonds, and we are currently allocating about $1.9 million out of capital every year for our construction projects. Well, those construction projects are wrapping up, so we're able to reallocate that funding to paying for the fields and turf.
Okay, so we have that, the lease revenue bonds that were approved by the school board a few years ago, about $42 million.
These would be new lease revenue bonds.
Okay. Why do we do it that way? Because again, we know that it costs taxpayers more money to pay those off.
I think, well, right now we're in a really advantageous position with lease revenue bonds. The interest rate is very low. They're in consideration of general obligation bonds. And the cost of waiting is that our students don't get what they need now. So I think that the board identifying these baseline improvements has done a really good job finding a creative solution to not increasing taxes and still offering flexibility on the future and bigger projects for the future board to determine, hey, how do we want to partner with the city, the municipal in these projects? Do we want to look for grant money through Olympics and or cover them ourselves through a general obligation bond or other funding sources that they can identify in the future.
Okay, so that's what you're saying, no tax increase for phases one, three, and four?
Yeah,
we
believe that those will cost taxpayers no additional dollars for those specific projects.
All right. Why is demolishing Treasure Mountain included in this? That work was already budgeted as part of the $122 million. Of both voter and lease revenue bonds?
Yeah, good question. That's not my understanding. And I could be wrong, Leslie. You know, I'm a little bit new in the interim role. So if I am wrong, we'll get that clarification to you. But it's my understanding that the demolition was not budgeted in the original bonding because a final decision had not been made yet on that building.
Okay.
And if I'm wrong, we'll try to get that clarification
All right,
to you.
I do recall it being part, at least okay. Something to dispose of it, somehow to take care of it. Mm-hmm. So phase three, that's the biggie. We're talking like more than $90 million for gym renovations, a music room remodel, parking expansion, and a new indoor field house. And as you kind of alluded to, have we had those conversations with Basin Rec and Park City Municipal? I mean, and really does Park City off of Kearns Boulevard make the best sense for a field house when the majority of population is out in the basin?
Those are great questions. I think that in terms of sense, anytime we can tie in the facilities right next door to the high school where they're utilized by our students, that's a primary location. We know that Kearns is a challenging area, especially at about 7:30 to 9 in the morning. It can always be difficult during snow season. But ultimately, those conversations and dialogues, I believe some have happened, and there's been no decision made specifically on phase three. It's an exciting phase. As many people know, I'm a basketball guy, so it has the phases that accommodate the gym, it accommodates our fine arts, a field house, talk of a pool as well. But ultimately, that dialogue, one of the reasons the board likes phases one, two, and four is they're able to move quickly on that while still offering the flexibility to the future to determine really how to best utilize that space and the funding. But there is a plan in place that allows the future board and the community to see how this could be phased out. And that was the heart of the athletic and master planning process.
Okay, because I know that there's lots of room out at Silver Creek Village, about 100 acres they're looking to fill with athletic facilities.
Yeah, and I think the board will have conversations around that, the future board, because ultimately there's definitely not been a decision on phase three, but anytime we can tie things in close to our facilities, it's a huge win for our students.
So why are the phases phased this way? I mean, is it in terms of need?
Yeah, I think in large part, as there's been a master athletic planning process that started about 6-7 months ago. There was community feedback. Obviously, the coaches and student athletes were able to chime in, and the need of phase one and phase two. Especially had high demand. Our fields are under a lot of stress. And on top of that, it's actually one of the easier and more cost-efficient parts of it. The board also feels like phase four is worth considering, as our track, ages, and an auxiliary building out there would be very, very beneficial to all of our sports teams that use that space, cheerleading, track and field, and football. So that's why it's on the table as well.
Yeah, and have we really determined what the needs are versus the wants in all of this?
I mean, needs and wants in Park City are very complex in general. I think that it depends on how you define need, right? But I think that they are there. These allow us to get to a baseline that's in competition, not in competition with, excuse me, but at the same level as our competition. And on top of it, really allow our students to achieve their academic and social potential. And we believe that extracurricular activities, whether it be athletics or performing in the Eccles Theater, are a great opportunity for our students to learn, engage, and become their best selves. So I know for me personally, extracurriculars is why I'm here today.
What about the pool facilities? You did hear from a parent that there's not enough room in the schedule to even host a home swim meet, which is a bit hard to believe. I mean, how is that schedule being filled? I mean, are we offering too much time to the public, or what's going on there?
Yeah, those are some questions I'm going to look into a little bit. I don't have all the answers on that. The pool, we have a great pool staff working hard at Ecker Hill, and it is something that has been priced out in the master athletic plan, so it's also something that can be considered. But I'm definitely going to look into that and try to have a better understanding of why space is so limited. But all of our facilities are under demand, whether it be the PC Mark, the field house, or the Park City School District athletic facilities. They're just under a lot of demand.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the enrollment that you heard from Business Administrator Randy Uppen, saying that we're down 129 students from last year, and we're over like 770. I mean, that's like an entire school from, you know, the last 10 years. But what is it telling us? I mean, that there are fewer students? Does it mean that they're headed to private school, to charter schools, or is it just that, you know, it's become too expensive and people can't afford to live here with children?
Yeah, I speculate it has a little bit to do with the pricing in this season. What we're seeing is our younger families, our classes aren't coming in as large, but we're seeing migration once they get in. So not surprisingly, that would suggest that it's pretty hard to afford here as you're a starting family. But as families have become more established, we're seeing them move in. And as our classes become more consistent at a lower level, that's allowing for a little bit greater consistency in our enrollment. And we're going to see what happens with some projects and also with realignment. One of the benefits to having a slight decrease is we're certainly not going to be busting at the seams day one on realignment, and that's going to allow us to settle, and then it'll allow the Board of Education to make some decisions on how they want to fill capacity if that's the right approach. But again, with developments coming online and realignment, I'm excited to see where we're actually falling over the course of the next couple of years.
Yeah, and how does that work? I mean, once you take a kid, does that student allowed to stay in the school through sixth grade or through seventh grade, or, you know, however the schools are broken
into?
Yeah,
we certainly don't want to allow a student to come in and kick them out the next day, despite what open enrollment rules may or may not allow. You know, we believe in each child, and once we have them in our system, we want to invest in them. So typically, it's re-looked at once they meet the next phase. So elementary school, they're in for elementary, middle, and high school, like you noted. But those are questions that we'll definitely be looking at over the course of the next few years.
All right. Somebody asked me to ask you, how do we trust the district to manage these huge projects when the high school doesn't even have heat this year and smells like sewage? What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, as someone who worked in the high school since 2015, there's always been a challenge with one bathroom. When the pee traps dry out, we've had that issue for a good 15 years, and it's been tough at the times. But ultimately, I mean, if you go into these buildings and you see the work that's been done, it's been quite remarkable. I'm incredibly proud of our buildings. Both Ecker and the high school are probably my favorite places in terms of facility space. These new facilities are coming online great. I'm impressed. And I'd encourage anyone that feels like they're not effective to come see them.
Is there heat in the high school?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. Maybe certain parts of it's not heated?
I think that anytime you're in construction, there are times where HVAC systems have had challenges. There's been days where we haven't had the air conditioning that we hope to have, for sure. When you're connecting pipes and ducts, and I'm not a construction expert, but those do create wrinkles along the way.
So what do you know about the district? I mean, we've heard that you had to swap out all of the new glass that's been put in the new buildings. to install bulletproof glass as required by the state legislature?
Yeah, I've heard that rumor. That's not true. We are, however, putting a ballistic material on all our glass in the new buildings, just like we have had in the past. And one thing that I give our chief operating officer, Mike Tanner, as well as the school board, a lot of credit for is their desire to ensure that we have safe spaces. So it's not just the ballistic film that we put on windows, which we've done a great job pursuing grant money, one-time legislative money, and using capital to pay for any gaps, but our artificial intelligence AGIC system that's watching our cameras, and then if they identify an unholstered weapon, it's immediately human verified, and within 5 to 7 seconds we could have a school on lockdown. And I don't like to talk about these things because this is everyone's worst fear, but the fact that we have those tools, we have a duress app that can be on every staff member's phone if they'd like. It's also loaded onto their computers, iPads, so they get instant communication, so we're not solely relying on communication systems. We're typically considered a leader in the state and even the nation in our safety measures, and that's a huge credit to Mr. Tanner and the team.
So that's only a film. I mean, we used to run and have an underwriter that would say sunglasses for your house, right, which protect the interior from the sun and heat. We're putting body armor film on.
It's a ballistic film, and ultimately what it does is it makes the glass far more resistant from shattering and ammunition. Now, granted, there's obviously levels of ammunition. We don't try to give all the details because sometimes, as Mike Tanner says the best, we don't want the bad guys to know everything about us. But with that being said, it definitely makes a far greater barrier, and it's something that we've actually started doing, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, at every school. So this is just a continuation of the project. I think that rumor probably started, someone heard ballistic glasses being installed and likely didn't understand.
Got it. We've also had questions, though, about COO Mark Tanner working remotely from Chicago while doing other contract work there. You're still, I know, brand new to the district, but do you know how much time he spends here versus Chicago?
That's an interesting question. Normally I wouldn't chat about personnel, but let's say, I've had a great time working with Mike every single day. I get a chance to speak with him. He's just a couple offices down. And then as a principal, I was fortunate enough to be the principal of Treasure Mountain Junior High, where his daughter goes to school. So I probably got to see him more than any other principal, because every morning we chat for a few minutes when he drops his daughter off. Mike, like the rest of our staff, works the majority of their days in the Park City School District, and as a district, we believe in trying to generate some flexibility at times. We've the board did an incredible job starting Flex Fridays for our teachers, and then at times direct supervisors for people who are out of the school. We want to create flexibility for people who are working 50, 60 hours a week. So if I can offer someone an afternoon off or a little bit more flexibility in the summer when students are in session, that's certainly something that we'll look at doing.
So do you become the point person then in the event of any emergency when...
Yeah, we have chains of command. So if people are out, which, for example, I've had to go to state meetings already with the state superintendent. There's been days where I've been out at conferences, et cetera, already. And we have chains of command and good communication strategies. Unfortunately, all of us have mobile phones and walkie-talkies. So we're typically able to be connected with, even if we're out of the district office.
Yeah, and a couple other things on construction. We had heard that an elevator in Park City High School didn't work early on the first couple of weeks of school, violating ADA regulations. Have you fixed that?
It's my understanding that the elevator works. I haven't ridden in personally. I've walked by it numerous times in Park City High School, so I'll have to verify that to know for sure. But every time I walk by it, certainly looks like a usable elevator. I haven't ridden in personally.
Yeah, and apparently Ecker Hill had failed a fire department inspection before school started, just not having the safety features, no railing on the second floor, we'd heard.
By the time it started, I know that all inspections had passed it. And it was tough to begin the year, right? I'm so proud of our teachers. I was a principal at the time, but I was able to walk through Park City High School. And the classroom is such a sacred space. And I think the biggest challenge to the beginning of the year was that we were not able to get our teachers in their classrooms as early because our contractors were trying to meet deadlines and get buildings online, which thankfully they did. And they met their promises, probably just barely. But I'm incredibly grateful for the teachers and their resiliency, because it's not ideal if you're not in the classroom 5-6 days before school starts. And a lot of our teachers weren't able to get in their classroom until a day or two prior, and that's stressful. But as you're in those spaces, I think most of them would say the pain was worth it, and we're in a much better spot now.
Yeah, and given that Mike Tanner does have some flexibility, did him not being here every day make a difference?
Well, I can't speak to what days he is and is not here. Everyone has vacation and personal time as well. But I don't think so. I really feel like Mike was available whenever I needed him, that's for sure. But again, I was in a different role this summer. But most importantly, the contractors worked really hard. And not surprisingly with construction, we're on time, and then it's really tight. And the fact that they were able to get the buildings open, I think is quite an accomplishment in and of itself, because rarely does construction go as planned.
All right. I saw you at the celebration for the Bright Futures 10-year anniversary Saturday. Can you talk a little bit about what that program has done for Park City High School students by both financially and emotionally supporting these first-generation college students?
Yeah, it's such a fun question, Leslie, because our Bright Futures program is about getting our first-generation college students through college. And what makes it unique is it doesn't end when they graduate. It continues with them. The support continues with them through mentorship, through financial support for paying for college and or other personal needs. So it's impacting hundreds of students now over the life of its program. And it was really fun to join a celebration and see these kids' life changed. And that is our mission, right? We want to open doors to kids' futures, and Bright Futures is a huge part of that. So we're so thankful for the community members and the mentors that have gotten involved, who've given their time and their financial resources. The two greatest things people can sacrifice, and they've done that for Bright Futures.
Yeah, now does the school district support that program, or that's all done from private donors and Park City Community Foundation?
Yeah, so that's done through the Ed Foundation, the Community Foundation, and private donors. We don't have to put extra funding into it. We do, however, have complementary programs like Dream Big, which are how our teachers come alongside some of our first-generation college students, specifically Ms. Moffitt and Ms. Williams, who are just world-class educators, along with the rest of the team at Park City High School to really make an impact. So we don't fund that program specifically, but we have programs that we run adjacent to them and make huge impact, and we're grateful for all the educators involved there.
All right. What, if anything, has been decided about finding a new full-time superintendent? I didn't see anything listed on the website at this point. Is the plan for you to finish out the school year?
Well, ultimately, it'll be up to the school board, and I know that they're eager to come in the future. But it is going to be the new board, for lack of a better term, once the new board is seated and the elections have occurred in January. I expect them to start that process quickly and go through the search. And I'm at their service until they're able to place someone.
All right. I heard there was a meeting last Wednesday to discuss a Title IX complaint. Apparently, district officials met with members of the U.S. Department of Education. What can you tell me about that?
Anytime we're meeting with the Office of Civil Rights, for example, there's obviously some privacy realities, but nothing new. We're continuing the process. We want no hate speech to exist in our school, and anything that we've been dealing with is a continuation on the concerns that were brought forth and how we can meet those needs. And we haven't arrived yet. We have got to continue to be vigilant against all forms of hate speech, and that's what we're passionate about. I'm actually excited, spoiler alert, to include some of the things we're doing in my next superintendent report for the board on how we're combating hate speech, because there's no place for it. And anytime it still occurs, it's a charge to keep going. We have got to get this out of our community and out of our schools.
So the meeting was with the Office of Civil Rights, not the Department of Education. Somebody got that wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. What about the rest of those complaints filed with the Office of Civil Rights? Are they being resolved case by case, or is it just that, look, we know we could have done better and we'll do better in the future? Or do each of those have to be resolved?
The resolution agreement has specific contingencies. Most of them have already been met. And the truth is, and then we send letters back and forth and go through a compliance process for about 2 years. But the truth is, the heart of what we're doing is trying to be intentional with the students and the learning. We have got to do a better job of making sure our students are educated on the pain and the hurt that this speech can cause and how we can get rid of it from our schools.
For those who are involved in those complaints with the Office of Civil Rights, do they receive any kind of updates? I mean, do they know that their case is being moved towards resolution?
I believe so, yes. What the Office of Civil Rights communicates explicitly with each person, I don't know exactly, because I'm not privy to those conversations, but we obviously provide updates to the Office of Civil Rights, and I'm under the impression, based on my communication with the Office of Civil Rights, that they speak with people who made complaints directly.
Okay, and I did notice that there was a position for a student services dean of student conduct. What's this person responsible for, dealing with these OCR complaints or?
Yeah, we're looking for a new student services dean at Park City High School. We were fortunate to bring deans online this year in every single school. And one of their key job responsibilities are to address any issue that comes that's in a discriminatory fashion and make sure they're addressed appropriately, documented appropriately, and that we put supports for both the victim in place and the appropriate consequences and learning experiences for the offender. And this just happens to be a situation where we had someone step away and we're reposting for that position.
Okay. I think I heard you say you have one in each school. So that would be seven deans?
Correct.
So those are seven new positions?
Yes, seven positions that came on this year. Well, the correction, there were two elementary deans between the four schools split between each. So there were five additional deans, and two of those were already in-house last year, but there are seven this year.
Are they full-time jobs?
Yes, they are.
What else do they do besides handle complaints? I mean, because if we're going to do better, we shouldn't really need this person.
Well, I think they're part of that process, right? They're part of the instruction. They're part of responding to concerns and ensuring that our compliance is high. But a dean doesn't just sit there and twiddle their thumbs, right? They're proactive. They're in classrooms. They're developing relationships with students, and that's how one of the modalities in which we believe we can eradicate hate speech from our schools.
All right. And I'm not sure who kind of deals with this. I think you have somebody that deals with curriculum and stuff, but report cards were issued by the State Office of Education. And just kind of looking, we've got some exemplary. We have some in terms of achievement, some commendable. But we look like we have some critical needs for English learner progress.
Yeah, multilingual learners is always an area of focus for us because it is so hard to become proficient at the academic level when you're learning in a second language. So it's something that we are focusing on, and we've made great gains and great strides. You see a lot of commendable and exemplary, but we know that there are times in which cohorts struggle, and it's something we're leaning into. We're utilizing PLCs to look at data to make sure we're driving instruction. PLC stands for Professional Learning Communities. It's where teachers team. We look at WIDA scores, where we're able to identify where the student is in their MLL, in their English language progression. So we're able to target specific strategies that might meet their need depending on their developmental level. And we're going to continue to address and attack those realities. But overall, could not be happier with the scores from the state report cards, even though standardized tests will never tell the full story of education. They don't. Am I proud of a district that had every single school in the top 16% of the state? Am I proud of a school whose four elementary schools are leading the way? Because we know if our kids are achieving and at grade level when they're in elementary school, the doors to their future are opening, and that is our mission. Our mission is that all students reach their social and academic potential. So our elementary schools are leading the way. Very proud of our secondary schools. And anytime there are issues, we've got to address those with strategic strategies. And we look forward to doing that because we have not arrived yet either as an academic institution. We don't have 100% proficiency. And until we do, which may be an unrealistic goal, we've got to keep moving forward.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yes. The board funded our preschool programs for next year, so we're going to be offering full-day preschool in both 3 and 4-year-olds, as well as half-day preschool for both 3 and 4-year-olds if the demand exists. Look for signups to come online in January on our website. And then tomorrow, for those of you who are interested, especially at the elementary level, we have a We All Belong, where we're going to be talking about how to report and some of our campaign initiatives, and that's at Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. And of course, I'm blanking the times. So I want to say 5:30 in English, and 30 minutes later, we're going to go in Spanish. Let me pull that up really quickly here. Yes, 5:30 to 6:30, we'll do a 30-minute English, 30-minute Spanish. Leslie, thanks so much for having me today.
Okay, thank you. That's Park City School District's Interim Superintendent of Schools, Caleb Fine. Well, this Saturday at the Marquee Park City, Mountain Town Music will present a recreation of The Last Waltz. That's the band's final concert. And in the studio with details, I have Mountain Town Music Executive Director Brian Richards, along with the Director of Community Outreach, Ryan Walsh. Good morning to both of you.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So very clever idea, Brian. Tell us how this is going to work.
It is going to be a community celebration, essentially. We're going to recreate the band's iconic last concert, The Last Waltz, live, featuring a bunch of awesome Utah local musicians. And we're inviting the community out because, you know, it's the Saturday before Election Day. It's, winter's coming soon, and too often than not, once winter hits, we never see our friends, our neighbors, our community. And so we wanted to really celebrate all that is awesome about this community. A lot of people haven't been in the Marquee since they renovated it. And so this gets people in the door and an opportunity to check out, you know, what is the coolest live music venue on Main Street right now.
Yeah, so you're going to have like the film, The Last Waltz, kind of screening in the background, or
we are
is
not.
It? No. Okay, so it's just going to be like musicians kind of playing the roles of that concert.
Exactly.
That's right. All right, so who are playing the members of the band? Robbie Robertson, Levon Helm, Rick Danko.
So we do have our all-star cast of Utah musicians, and I'm actually one of the guests,
yeah.
So a little plug there. But the band itself is Jeremy Whitesides, Dave Mealy, Adam Fifield, Matt Wilson, and Nick Chamberlain. And I was with some of them last night rehearsing, and these guys are just terrific musicians and brought together for this special purpose. It's going to be a really special event.
All right. Tell me a little bit about the special guests. I mean, you are one of them, some of the musicians who will be playing... What, the likes of Joni Mitchell?
That's correct. This event, the film, The Last Concert, had a lot of cameo appearances by other musicians, and these special guests are representing some of those folks. For my role, I'm performing Dry Your Eyes by Neil Diamond, and that was an album that was produced by Robbie Robertson. It was on an album produced by Robbie Robertson, so Neil Diamond just was a walk-on, performs the song and disappears and comes back for the finale, when Bob Dylan does his superset in the show.
Okay, who's playing Dylan?
I think it's Preston.
Okay.
Preston Creed. He was singing. I can't remember which ones he was singing last night, but I think it might be Preston Creed.
Okay, and is it? I mean, these folks were chosen. I mean, they've obviously got some musical ability, but it was because they knew the music, or they kind of sound like Bob Dylan, or you sound like Neil Diamond. I mean, how is that?
I can answer that. So our buddy Junior, you know, Junior's been a long time part of the Mountain Time Music family. Junior Richard, he had started the Last Waltz recreation probably about 5 or 6 years ago, so pre-COVID. He did a couple of these concerts down in Salt Lake City. And we had a gentleman named Keith Pinnell, who's in a local band called Cosmic Possum. He reached out to us sometime in early spring. He was like, hey, I would love to help you guys create The Last Waltz. And it piqued my interest because I remember going down to the depot sometime around Thanksgiving about 5 years ago when Junior put this concert on. I was like, it's so fun. Depot was sold out. It was an amazing experience. And I was like, oh, man, yeah, let's do that. That would be a great opportunity right around Thanksgiving time, because that was when the original Last Waltz was released in the, what, 76? 76?
Yeah, 70, yeah.
And so we started chatting with Junior, and I'm like, hey, man, like, we got this idea. This gentleman, Keith, wants to recreate the Last Waltz. And he's like, well, I have the band. And he basically, they've been sort of playing this for the last few years or so. And so he put the band together that knows the material, and then sort of kind of handpicked the artists that he thought would, you know, be helpful to create the Last Waltz. And so Junior is sort of the ultimate band producer.
Nice. And that's really what it is. I mean, the film, I should say. I mean, I wasn't there for the concert, but to watch the film, right? Martin Scorsese directing, and it's like a concert film, right?
Totally.
That's right.
Yeah, so we're kind of going to get that feel of maybe having had been there.
It's going to be cool because, again, it's a faithful recreation. So it's going to be the concert. And there's a lot of moving parts. So people are going to be coming in and out. And, you know, there may be bloopers. They're like, we want this to be a fun evening to get the community together, to showcase what Mountain Time Music does, which ultimately supports local musicians. And so, you know, I encourage, it's a relatively inexpensive price point. It's $25. And I encourage the community, again, to come out. It's a Saturday night. It's early. It's 8 to 11, so you can be home and in bed by 11:30. And, you know, let's celebrate. Let's celebrate all that is Park City and live music. And
all right. Tickets are online, mountaintownmusic.org.
Yep, mountaintownmusic.org.
Yeah. And, Ryan, tell us about some of the other special guests that you've got. I mean, you mentioned Bob Dylan, Neil Diamond, Joni Mitchell.
We've got some names that are more familiar here in Park City. Kate Chanson, or Kate Smith. Kate performs very frequently around town, Alicia Stockman, Dana Williams, a very familiar name here in the community, of course. Junior looks like will be getting on stage with us. And then some folks like Sarah DeGraw, Rick Gerber, another musician who plays up here frequently. So names and faces that will be familiar enough to those who've seen music around town and combined in a way that is a little bit out of their element, but in a way that the sum is greater than, or the whole will be greater than the sum of its parts.
All right. And again, you kind of got that role. And
yes.
How does that work then? So you kind of just practice yours, but
great.
You're actually...
Yeah.
How much practice have you had with the band?
That's a great question. So each of us are, these are all full pro musicians, as you can imagine. So for my role, I've learned my song. I'm effectively channeling Neil Diamond. That's my goal, at least. So we were at a rehearsal last night in Salt Lake, and we sort of switched out in rehearsal in a manner that's going to mimic the show. Mm. And effectively, I'll be side stage during the song before, and then I will come out and kind of plug in and step up to the microphone and start. And rehearsals have, the rehearsal last night at least flowed like that very well. And these are all very collegial folks as well as consummate professionals. So it's going to be folksy and accessible while at the same time being a professional live stage show.
Okay. And these are iconic songs, you know, too. So, I mean... Everybody's there. It's going to be singing along like that. That's what's so cool about it is everybody knows all the songs.
That's what I was going to say. This is my band.
Yeah, totally. I do want to give a shout out to some of our community partners that helped make this show happen. We have the Park Silly Sunday Market, KPCW, Sage Mountain Sanctuary, Live Like Sam, and the Park City Summit County Arts Council.
Okay.
And of course, the Marquee.
Sure. How did KPCW help?
Here we are.
Promotional partners.
That's
yeah.
right. Good.
We were here for the fund, the pledge drive.
Yep.
And so we utilize that in-kind effort for our online or on-air promotion.
Awesome.
And also we've co-branded a social media post for
Great.
Too.
Great. Well, looking forward to it, guys.
Yeah.
Anything
else
you want to add?
I don't think so. Hopefully we'll see everybody on Saturday.
Okay. Ryan Walsh and Brian Richards, Mountain Town Music, thanks for your time. In the studio now with an update from the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau is CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Let's start with the latest lodging data. What have you got?
Let's do that. Let's look back at the last 6 months first so we can maybe wrap up summer a little bit looking at the last 6 months. Occupancy finished a little bit down for the last 6 months, down just about a percent and a half, just below 34% total average occupancy. And average daily rates finished up about 5%. So, you know, we're having a little bit of that teeter-totter effect with maybe a little less visitor volume, but those visitors who are here spending a little bit more while they're here. And we're also seeing that in our spending data for the last 6 months. In fact, we get data from Visa credit cards, and they tell us that domestic spending for August actually increased 6% compared to last August. And we're seeing some incredible growth in international spending for that same time period. International spending in the area increased by about 18% for August. So really positive numbers there. Our Summit County tax collections are showing the same increases there. We're looking at local sales taxes year to date. So this is for the last 9 months of the year, January through September. Local sales taxes are up 3%. Restaurant taxes also up 5%. Transient room taxes up 5%. And then that recreation arts and parks tax is also up 4%. So seeing some positive, I would say summer was solid. It wasn't great, it wasn't bad, it was solid.
Yeah, and when we talk about 34% average occupancy, I mean, that means only a third of the hotel rooms are filled. How do people stay in business?
You're right. I know. I think a lot about that. I think we see maybe some of that inventory shifting over to full-time residents who are maybe coming for a month or so, visiting and staying in their homes during that time. But that's a concern for me too. When I see average occupancies, you know, at less than 50%, there's still work to be done there.
Yeah, and then in terms of winter, I mean, what does that look like? I mean, we're never at 100%, are we?
No, never. I don't think I've ever seen a 100% number in any of the data that we're looking at. Right now, when we look at the future 6 months, occupancy on average is up about 4%. Average daily rates for those same months are up also about 4%. But what we're seeing in terms of reservations and pace is a very slow start to the season in terms of reservations. We're looking at November right now, pace is down about 5%. December also surprisingly down about 7%, and January down about 9%. But where we're really recovering is reservations on the books for February and March, up 20% in February and up 14% in March. So that is giving our next 6 month highlight average of, you know, up about 3%. But we're also seeing this across our competitive set. Very slow start for November, December, especially around the holidays. I think people are maybe just waiting to get through the election. You know, there's always an impact to the economy and to tourism, to consumer confidence in looking ahead. You know, we do, especially then when the snow comes, I think we'll continue to see those and hear those phones ringing.
Yeah, and it seems like sometimes just when Christmas and New Year's falls on a certain day of the week, things are different as well.
Also, yeah, that it has a big impact when Christmas falls midweek compared to when it falls on a Monday or a Friday, impacting either the week before or the week after. In fact, we're preparing a lot of information right now for our upcoming Tourism Fall Forum, which that event is this Friday, November 1st at the Stein Erickson Lodge. And we're looking at a lot of trends for the winter that I'd love to just maybe highlight a sneak peek of a few of those that we're hearing about, so that our businesses and community can start to think about how can they take advantage of some of these trends. Eco-friendly travel will be a travel industry priority. Local immersion is something that visitors are looking for. They want to interact with locals. They want to be part of what locals are participating in. More travelers, they're saying, will go to nature-based destinations, which I think is a positive for us here in Park City. Sports tourism is going to surge in 2025, and we're also going to be seeing that with some of the great games that are coming into Salt Lake City and how we can take advantage of that. I think a good trend is that Insta-focused travel will decline. So this idea of going to places that are really popular on Instagram will decline. Food-focused travel, though, will grow. So a lot of interesting trends. One of the most interesting trends that I've been reading about is this multi-generational journey. By 2025, at least 7 generations are going to be participating in the travel market. The first beta babies will be born to Gen Zers, and they'll join Generation Alpha, Millennials, Xers, Boomers, and older people traveling. So it's going to be really interesting as the tourism sector adapts to this really diverse group of people who are traveling. And, you know, how are we adapting to the influence of social networks like TikTok? So a lot of great information that we're prepared to share at our Tourism Fall Forum later this week.
Okay. Tickets still available for that?
Unfortunately, it is sold out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And that this is where you get kind of the updates from the resorts and Woodward. And
we do. Yeah. This Fall Forum is going to be a great event. And we'll certainly, we can do some highlights of it after the event if you'd like us to come back in. We will have an update from Nathan Rafferty from Ski Utah, so we'll get a good idea of what's happening around the state at other ski resorts, the upgrades and programming that they're doing so that we know what's happening in the state. We'll also have a resort panel, so we'll have Park City Mountain, Woodward, and Deer Valley with us on that panel, and special thanks to Tom Kelly, who's going to moderate that for us. We'll also have Catherine Rainey Norman, who's the chair of the Utah Committee for the Games, presenting to us and giving us some next steps of what we can expect in preparation for the 34 games. And then we're really excited to welcome Haley Batten, who was the silver medal winner in mountain biking in Paris, talking about what it's like to be a local and what Park City meant to her in preparation for those games.
Okay. Move on to the Business University is getting a rebrand. How so?
We are. We are rebranding the Park City Business University in partnership with the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce and making it more of a Wasatch-back business university. You know, one of the things that our members and our boards are telling us is that they really want us to think more regionally and really wrap our arms around the entire Wasatch Back as we're thinking about tourism and economic development and growth. So this partnership, again, we partner a lot with the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce. They're great partners to us. In fact, we do our Wasatch Back Economic Summit in the spring each year with them. So this is just an expansion. We'll be working with them. We'll be alternating when those events are held, 1 month in Park City, the next month in Heber, so that we can be really thinking more regionally. We have some great events coming up. These events are free for our members. So if you're a member of either one of those chambers, you can attend. The next one is November 6th. That's on financial planning and cash flow management. That's going to be held at the Utah Valley University, the Wasatch Campus. And then we have the next event held on December 4th, which is strategic marketing and customer retention. And that will be held at the Blair Education Center. You know, Leslie, one of the things that we're thinking about as we're just thinking about the economy and economic diversification for our community is focusing, yes, of course, on tourism and what tourism means for our community, but also helping our non-tourism related businesses or maybe indirectly impacted tourism businesses really expand their knowledge, their network, and their business acumen. So we're looking at topics that are not necessarily so tourism focused, but more broadly focused programming.
So what's the fee to attend one of those?
Those are free. If you're a member, those are free. And I don't know if we have a non-member price. That's a good question. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Okay. And then what is it that you bring in experts from financial planning and cash flow management to teach these?
We do. Yeah, we have third-party experts that come in and talk about these topics for us. And we're open to topics that our businesses are interested in hearing. So if any business has a topic in particular that they'd like to hear about, they can just reach out to us and let us know.
All right. And again, people will need to register, and that can all be done online at either Heber City or Park City.
Yeah, you can certainly go to parkcitychamber.com. There are some great resources on that website, Leslie, that we've been continuing to update. In fact, we're just launching the Seasonal Workforce Resource Guide. That's a program that the Mayor Worrell instituted a few years ago as we were thinking about how can we better assist seasonal workers in our community. That can be found also at parkcitychamber.com. Great resources, and if any listeners have ideas of how we can enhance that page for our seasonal workers, we encourage them to reach out to us.
All right, and you're spreading the brand, the Mountain Cut. It's all on the new city buses. So.
We're loving it. Yeah, we're really excited to have the visitors through their journey of exploring and, you know, from potential visitor, they're seeing that brand, that Mountain Kind brand, all the way through to now when they're in market, and the ability to impact visitor behavior through that Mountain Kind brand is something that we're really proud of and thankful for that partnership with the city.
All right. Jennifer Wesselhoff, CEO, Park City Chamber and Commerce and Visitors Bureau. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.